G'day and welcome to the Hunting Connection podcast. My name is Zach Williams and I am your host. Here we'll connect you with hunters, fishers and outdoor enthusiasts from around the globe. This podcast will share hunting and fishing stories, including past experiences, and tackle the tough hunting stereotypes our community faces. We hope to be a positive influence to those outside the community while also having a laugh along the way. Hope you enjoy the podcast. G'day and welcome to another episode of Hunting Connection Podcast. On today's episode, we've got Andrew and Brody. How are you guys going?
Yeah, good. Yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. How's your rut been?
Yeah, it's been really good one this year, actually. Brody achieved a goal that both of us have been trying for the last 7 years for him to finally get his first deer with a bow and arrow.
Not only one, but you ended up getting two, didn't you?
Yeah, two on the same weekend. First day we got up there, got one. The next day, first thing in the morning, just walked up the road a little bit and, had a rattle. Then, he came in and got the second one.
How good. How did that feel, dropping your first two deer?
Oh, it felt great, it did. So overwhelming it was. So proud, just couldn't believe it. Really good.
Nah, that's awesome. We'll jump into it. Where are you guys from?
Tamworth.
Tamworth, beautiful.
New South Wales, yeah.
Awesome. And what do you do for work, Andrew?
I'm a fire technician.
Yeah, beautiful.
I've been a fire technician for the last 15 years.
Yep, beautiful.
So, keeps me occupied.
And Brody, you're in school. How old are you and what grade are you in, mate?
I'm 15, and I'm in year 9.
Yeah, beautiful, mate. Beautiful. You enjoy school? Got any favourite subjects?
Yeah, I enjoy school at the moment. Next term, because I'm on school holidays at the moment, I'm going to be ending up going over to TAFE. And I'm going to be doing a bit of engineering work there. And then, through school and that, which is good. I've been doing a little bit of different, work experience stuff, going over to different workplaces, seeing what they're like. It's great, it is.
Awesome.
Really enjoying that.
That's good. So you like hands-on and working with your hands?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
It's great.
Do you know what you want to do when you finish school? What type of trade you want to get into?
Not overly sure yet. It'd be good to find out a couple different ones, see which one's most interested in, and, find out from then.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So, Andrew, how'd you get into hunting?
I got into hunting with my old man, my dad. He used to do a lot of hunting and shooting and all that sort of stuff. When he was a kid as well, he shot a bow. He bought a bow when he was 13. When I was young, I think I was 6 when he got me into it. So I'm 42 now. So I've been flinging arrows since I was 6 years old.
That's awesome.
Few years now. So dad got into it. He used to shoot a lot of foxes and stuff like that, like most fathers did, back in the day. It was all fetching good money.
Yeah.
He sort of was been right into his fishing and shooting and that sort of stuff. And then he got into archery as a little kid, but didn't stick with the archery for forever. He was more so into the rifles. And then when, I showed a bit of interest in it, we had we got a really good mate of ours, back then, which was, Mike Hogno. He was a good friend of Dad's, and Mike Hogno and Ken Reichel, they helped me get right into the old bows and all that sort of jazz. So, and I've just, been hooked ever since.
That's awesome. What was your first animal with the bow and how old?
I would have been about 7. I shot a few rabbits, that sort of stuff. We went out, with Mike Hogno and, got a handful of rabbits on a property that he used to manage. So just out of beautiful. Town. So, still remember those nights.
How good is that? It definitely seems that hunting runs in the family. And what about you, Brody? How old were you when you first took your first animal with a bow?
I would have been about 6 or 7, wouldn't have I?
Yeah, six,
pretty sure. And pretty sure it was a rabbit, wasn't it? Rabbit or that goat?
No, you shot a goat.
Yeah, I got a goat first. For my first animal, which was really good.
How good?
And I got it all on video as well. And he turns around and he's like, gets really excited. And he's like, oh, that was in the heart. That was in the heart, wasn't it? And I'm just like, yeah. And he goes, I didn't even need you, Dad. Just that's, put me straight in my place.
That's so good. And that's you're running compound back then. Is that how you got Brody into it? Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. I started Brody off and Lacey as well. Started them both off on a little just a little red zone longbow, little fiberglass longbow. Just got them started on that, and then I gradually stepped them up into a nice little compound bow.
That's so good. Watching your guys' socials, it definitely looks like you're out hunting or fishing nearly every spare minute you guys get. It's been great watching the kids' progression, whether, you know, Lacey's goat that you posted up, when was that, middle last year, early last year?
Middle of last year, yep.
That was awesome. That was such a wicked video.
it was, and like that was with at the time, that was with your old bow.
Yeah.
Was it? Like I got Brody a little Diamond Atomic bow, which is like fantastic for young kids. They just got a massive draw range on them, and same with the poundage as well.
Yeah.
So that's what that was Brody's first compound bow. He got that, and then I handed it down once he started growing, handed it down to Lacey, and it sort of went on from there.
How good. Speaking of bows, what do you guys shoot at the moment?
I'm shooting at the moment a Bowtech Amplifier which is really good. Yeah, I'm running about 52 pound with 28.5 inch draw length.
Nice. And what arrows and broadhead combo are you shooting out of that, mate?
You're shooting now the new Gold Tip LRT long range tactical shafts. They're
all right,
a Pierce.
Cool.
Pierce arrow. They're the new 00001 straightness. So he's just switched over to them, but he's been shooting for a number of years now. The Gold Tip Platinum Pierce.
Yep.
Arrows.
Yeah, sweet.
So really small diameter shaft, so great for penetration.
How good. And what broadheads were you running there as well, mate?
At the moment, I'm running the brand new 100 grain Cayuga broadhead Trizots I am at the moment.
Awesome, awesome. The new Cayuga range looks pretty good. They seem to
really good.
Seem to hit hard.
We've only just changed over to the to using the three blade, especially for Brody, just with the, like, so I've just played around with the kids, just with like all different broadheads and for their best penetration and that sort of stuff. But Brody's been shooting the Zots, the 100 grain Zots, just the two bladers, for basically since they come out. He gets unreal results with them just because they've got a longer cut on them. He just gets really good penetration with those little fellas. So I've played around when he was littler. We were just running the first lots of the Cayuga broadheads that Matty Moore released back then. And I used to grind them down to 100 grainers for Brody.
Yeah.
And I used to sharpen the back of them and that sort of stuff. Just being that lighter poundage, if he gets it in nice, like in a good shot, at least if the back of the broadhead sharp when it's working its way out, as the animal runs off, it's cutting arteries and all that sort of stuff on the way back out. So, he was using them for ice. That's all he's ever shot. The Cayuga broadhead. So I did buy some just to do some tests, another brand broadhead, which was a single bevel. Just wanted to check, like, same grains, 100 grains, but I just wanted to do some penetration tests and that sort of stuff so I can explain to people like using a single bevel with really light poundage and stuff. The single bevels for the really light poundage just did not perform anywhere near as good as the as your double. The double had heaps better penetration for that light poundage.
How good. Speaking of the low poundage and lighter arrows, what grain is Lacey running there? Because, you know, eventually I want to set up my youngest's bow to
eventually take out, you know, goats, hopefully, when he gets a little bit older. What type of arrow weight are you running there and poundage for goats?
Lacey was sort of, she's sitting at about 20 pound now. Brody was sort of sitting on that 17 pound.
Yep.
Brody shot a lot of goats with 17 pound and pigs as well.
Yeah, wow.
He shot some really good little pigs and that sort of stuff with 17 pound. I started the kids off first up with the gold tip lightning arrows. They're just the cheapest sort of arrow in that sort of 500 spine, 5 to 600 spine. And then you just tee it up with a good two-blade broadhead, cut on contact sort of thing, double bevel as well. And like they're sort of sitting around that 300 grains.
Okay.
They were. You sort of don't want to go too heavy. And you want reasonable weight up the front with that 100 grain because the arrows are so short.
Yeah.
And having 100 grains up the front, it gives you good FOC anyway.
Yeah, beautiful.
But, yeah, Brody's always got, like, good penetration, that sort of stuff with his really light setups. And, yeah, same with Lacey's as well. That goat that she shot it from about 15 metres, 15 yards.
Yep.
With a gold tip platinum Pierce 500. And a 100 grain Zot broadhead from Cayuga. And she got, like, it poked straight out, straight in one side and out the other side. And so it was good. Just hanging in with the flights on the other side. So, yeah, good penetration.
And when you're taking them out when they were that young with the lighter poundage and that, are you aiming for certain age goats, younger goats, or nan?
I'll always start them off with the younger goats and that sort of stuff, and you can try and get in nice and close. And like with the younger animals, you can get away with a bit more when you got a kid. They can, if they move at the wrong time and that sort of thing, the younger animals will stay there and not do the Harry Holt like the older ones. So yeah, your younger ones, yeah, so much easier and just better for the kids to learn. And just start them off as close as you possibly can, like anything. You just want to shoot your effective range. I've always limited sort of Brody at, sort of 10, 15 yards and closer if we can. So that's what we've sort of struggled, being so hard for him to get these deer over the last 7 years.
I bet. They can be tricky, but you look like you do all right rattling them in.
But rattle them in and do the doe calls and the croaking and all that sort of stuff.
You got any tips on rattling them in? It's something that I have not really had much luck with at all.
Yep.
I'm not sure if it's the deer down here don't respond as well to it or.
This year I found it really worked. Like I've been hunting this particular property for about 3 years. It's sort of haven't called an animal in. And this year was the first time I'd sort of called one in, and I mixed it up a little bit. We found a few scrapes this year, and I actually started off, instead of rattling straight away, I started off with a few croaks.
Okay.
And just giving it a few rests and a couple of croaks, and then I'd do a bit of a sequence of rattles and whatnot, and then I'd sort of stop for a little bit and let out a couple of croaks. And, that sort of called us in. 3 to 4 bucks on that one weekend.
How good.
That sort of worked us really well. I know a lot of people don't like blind rattling. I have had success doing a little bit of blind rattling, that sort of stuff. But, yeah, I still always want to make sure there's sign there, as in rub trees. Scrapes are always fantastic because the bucks are usually always come to the scrapes to make sure that they can mark their territory.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
And how long are you sitting off a scrape rattling for? Like, what's your sequence? How long?
You sort of, if you can sit there for sort of 15 minutes, sort of around that sort of 15 minutes and sometimes even longer, like sometimes you'll get them, they'll come to a certain distance and then they'll just hang there and just wait and they'll be thinking, righto, what's going on here? I haven't seen anything yet. That's some of the older ones. And then I'll find if you keep going and you sit there for that little bit longer, and just wait and even stay tight-lipped for a little bit. You'll get those bigger ones will come and, wander their way in, just a bit more cautious.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sweet. And, Brody, what about when you started going out with Dad? How old were you when you started tagging along and just following along before you actually started hunting?
Oh, years.
Day like, dot?
Yeah, day dot, basically. Years and years on. It was really good.
I'm sitting here looking at a photo. I got a four shot of 42-inch Billy, and I've got a photo of Brody strapped onto the front of me. He was actually, he would have been only, I think you're only 4 or 5 months old. So, from day dot, we've always sort of taken him out.
That's good. So no choice. And you've always wanted to go out? You've never not wanted to?
Nah, never not have. Always want to go out. It's always great, it is.
That's good.
Even if you don't get anything, always good to get outside, it is. It's great.
Awesome. And how have you gone with the walking? I've got a 9-year-old and, getting him out to do the walking side of it. You know, he doesn't mind the sitting if we're seeing stuff, but as soon as we're having to, do 6-7 kilometres, he struggles with it.
I'm pretty good with the walking. I am, I've done it for long enough that I've gotten used to it and, fit enough. So, walking doesn't really fuss me. I'm pretty good for it,
That's good. And
when you were little, you did some big K's when you were young. So especially for the last 7 years, like after these deer, some days there I didn't even take my bow out. It was just always just his bow only, and trekking around some pretty decent hills for a young fella.
That's good. And
done really good.
You've been able to keep both kids interested the whole time. Like,
You
got any tips or tricks?
Lacey, she gets scared in the bush a bit, and because she's got like the processors, the cochlear implants, she gets a bit scared when she's out there. So sometimes she'll actually take her processors off, just with the noises and the different noises and that out there. She'll get a bit scared, and it took a fair bit of encouragement for her to take that first go, because she got in quite a number of times there, like close. And when she gets really close, she just gets a bit scared when you're in really close to the animals.
Yeah.
And when she was really young, I got her into a nice young goat, and I made sure it was a blunt head and that sort of stuff, just to let her get used to it, let her get in there, because she wasn't quite at the poundage that was safe and ethical for an animal, like to kill the animal.
Yeah.
And I got her in nice and close one day, and she shot a goat, and she shot it perfect, like a young goat. And the arrow just bounced off. Like, it wasn't enough, and I made sure it was blunt enough just to bounce off. And she got so excited, and Brody had shot a goat only a few seconds before, and there's a bit of blood on the ground, and she's like, "Oh, that's the blood from my goat." She got a bit excited from that. But, quite often she gets a bit scared. And the goat that she did take last year, like, we had all of us there. There was Brody there. I was there. My wife Kim was there. And we even had our dog, our French bulldog, with us on the lead. And
that's so good.
Yeah, called these couple of young goats, and they were distracted. And, they let us all sort of sneak in there. And our French bulldog, she doesn't do anything. She doesn't care. And she just sits beside us. And I just sort of spoke to Lacey, "No, you're right, darling. You're right, darling." And, got her into that distance she was comfortable with, and she just absolutely smoked it. Like, top of the heart when she hit it. And I've got videos here of her, because my wife was filming one angle, I was filming over Lacey's shoulder, and it was just like, her face was just like, "Oh my God, I hit it." And she's got so excited, and then she'll get excited when we take her out, go, "I want to shoot a bigger one. I want to shoot a bigger one." And then you get her in there nice and close, and then she's just like, "Oh, nah, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it." And I'll never force her.
Yeah.
It's just, that's one thing you shouldn't do. Is if they're not ready, if they're not, they don't want to do it, don't try and put pressure on them to make them do it.
Yeah.
And just let them do it at their own pace. Like, as soon as you try and force them, that sort of stuff, they'll tend to just dislike it and that sort of stuff. And, like, I took Lacey out shooting her new gun there today, and she's just like, oh, she just wanted to shoot something. She just wanted to shoot something with it and that sort of stuff. She says, oh, I'd be happy to shoot a goat with this, Dad, because then I don't have to get so close to it and I won't get so scared. So, yeah, it's just that sort of thing. Just don't push your kids.
Yeah.
If they want to do it, they want to do it, sort of thing. And, again, if they're not overly confident, put like a blunt or something on their arrow and teach them the stalking skills of getting in nice and close. And because there's nothing worse for a young kid to see an animal get shot in the wrong spot, yeah, and then it runs away making terrible noises that, yeah, nobody wants to see, which we all know it does happen. But if you get them in there, then they get their nerves, so they can tend to control their nerves a little bit more and shoot an animal, and it bounces off. Doesn't hurt the animal.
I like that. I like that idea of the stump shooting the animals with a blunt. I'll have to put that one into practice when the youngest is old enough, I reckon.
No, most definitely. And just get them in there, like a little blunt on them, let them practice with the blunt and that sort of stuff so they know how it shoots, of course. And then, yeah, get them into a nice young goat and or a young pig or something like that, and then let them shoot it. And they learn to know where to shoot it. And if they do hit it wrong, it's not going to hurt the animal. And then once they start getting stronger and they can shoot more poundage and they're starting to help control their nerves, because, yeah, some of those animals are big to those little kids.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Like I said, I really, really rate that idea of stump shooting them. That's works out really well, I reckon. Get them nice and close, and yeah, deal with those nerves a bit better. And if you can get them in there young enough, they won't have that big buck fever.
No, that's exactly right. Like, yeah, when Brody shot his first buck this year, his first ever deer, he was like, because when I called it, I saw it coming in, it sort of stopped at a little bit of a distance and started flogging a tree. And I just sort of stayed tight for a little bit and then gave it a light rattle and that again. And it sort of popped its head up again and then just kept like moseying on in. And when I saw the antlers, and I thought it was only a young buck, but after he put it on the ground and I got to have a look at the antlers properly and the coronets and stuff like that, it ended up being a really old fella.
Yeah,
wicked. Because the coronets were like sunk right into its head.
Yeah, wow.
But it was just didn't have the genes. It was never going to grow any good, and it was obviously going backwards as well. But yeah, I got his buck just moseying on in, and Brody drew nice and early because he was about 20 meters from the side of me, and it just comes straight towards his scrape and basically nearly straight towards him, and I felt the wind sort of going slightly sideways, and I was just like, oh, like, because it was getting close to him. I'm like, oh, you better shoot it. And then, he let it get to a good shooting lane, and he pulled it up with a doe call and, smacked it from, 14 yards? About 13, 14 yards, and hit it sort of right in the front point of the triangle.
Yeah, beautiful.
And come out just under the armpit on the other side, basically, and, it took out its heart, and it ran probably 20 yards and fell over.
How good. So, Brody, have you had you said you've been trying for the last 7 years for a deer. Have you had a few misses in that time? And
plenty of misses and all that. Yeah, plenty over the top, underneath them, all that sort of stuff they speak. But, it's always been good learning, seeing what I can do better, just learning from the mistakes. And, eventually it'll come. Like this year, got the two. Happened, it was good.
That's awesome. And now you got two on the deck. It's just only going to come better and better.
Yeah, hopefully, for sure.
We always used to limit the distance too for him with that light poundage. And we always, with deer moving so quick, we sort of had to limit it to when you're calling them in, especially because they're alert and everything, had to limit it to sort of that 10 yards, 15 yards. And that's sort of what always went wrong for us. It had come in that close and then been so young, just sort of wobbling a little bit or just move just at the wrong time when you're trying to get him in that close. It was always a bit of a struggle streak. But you did shoot one a few years ago now, and you shot it from about 15 yards, and it dropped at the shot, and he still like smoked it, perfect shot, but it just just didn't quite, because the deer moved so much as the arrow was about to hit it, it just didn't have enough drive to get in quite deep enough. But yeah, we had a good blood trail, and we end up losing it in some really steep wattle country, which was a nice young buck. But yeah, a bit devastating, but it can happen.
It does happen, man. I went out last Friday, not Friday, just gone the Friday beforehand, and I'd been following a couple of little croaks and went down and checked the trail cameras as I was leaving the property, and had a nice buck come in behind me. Didn't know I was on the scrape. I heard him crack a stick, and doe called him, and he walked out, 30 meters, but I had a little shooting lane that I could shoot through. And as soon as he's walked into that, I've ducked down and taken the shot, through a couple of trees, under a log, and hit him perfect in the shoulder. But I reckon he's moved a little bit and spun as I've hit him, and hit him right in the shoulder blade, right in the solid part of the bone, and only ended up getting about 3 inches of peno. And I was devastated. I spent 5 hours, like I followed the blood and, just started doing laps using Onyx maps, just double making sure he wasn't down, because I heard a hell of a crash. But I reckon it was just him pushing through all the thick scrub, and I was devastated. He would have been personal best buck too.
Yeah, it happens.
It does. And, he'll be fine. He'll show up on cameras again, I reckon. And he'll just have a little bit of a limp for a while, No worse than what they get during the rut anyway.
They copper flogging, don't they?
Yeah, I've seen some deep tine marks in some of the bucks out this way from fighting. So and people think bow hunting's cruel, but they stab each other with antlers.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely.
So Brody, what would be your favorite species to chase with a bow right now? Is it fallow, or you love your goats or your pigs?
Really. The goats, they're really fun, they are. They're a real fun thing. Usually you get up right in between them, they're good fun. Like the past couple of times we've been out hunting for the goats, I've been trying, sneaking in myself, getting a couple of av, which last time I got 2 walking in just by myself, looking at the wind, using a wind puffer, seeing how far I am, and sighting the distance and then taking the shot and getting them. It's good fun, it is.
How good?
Always great. Not too hard of an animal to get, they aren't. But yeah, still something good to practice on, for sure.
And what's your personal best goat so far, mate?
37 inches it is.
Jesus, beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. It's great.
And what about you, Andrew? What's your favourite species to chase with a bow?
I still like, I sort of basically cut my teeth shooting the goats, but I do love hunting rabbits. That is one critter I love to shoot. Aim small, miss small sort of thing. Always just trying to head shoot rabbits. And, you can practice them at a long distance too. I enjoy doing that. So, rabbits is probably one of my favorite little critters to shoot.
Yeah.
I love hunting, Basically, love hunting everything. From your deer and pigs and all that sort of stuff. I've still always love it, but I do really enjoy chasing a few bunnies around.
Yeah, all rabbits are great fun. I'm just spewing the numbers aren't around, like they were in the golden olden days. Chatting to people like Dave Whiting, where they just sit off of warrens and shoot rabbits, foxes, cats all day.
Yeah. That's right. And like I still hunt one of my blocks that I've hunted for over 30 years. And when I was a younger sort of fella, and like I've said to Brody, I said, "See this hill here?" And he's like, "Yeah." There's still rabbit warrens and that there. No sort of rabbits here. I said, Poppy and I've sat here in the car with the 22s, and this whole side of the hill was just white bellies. We shot dozens and dozens and dozens of them. And then you sit there and then you just go and pick them all up. And it's just, Back then there was some, so many rabbits. It was good.
Oh, and the incredible eating too, I reckon. They're one of my favourite things to shoot and eat.
Yeah, it's like, we used to eat them. My mum used to cook them up and that for us and that a bit. But over the last sort of, well, not for a while, my grandparents have passed away now, but I still shoot rabbits. Like, I'll take Brody out now and he'll go and shoot like 3 or 4 rabbits, 5 rabbits. And then we'll always bring a couple home for the dogs. So he gives the dogs one each. And then he always brings it around to my mother, which is his ma. He always brings them around to her and she loves it. Like, she cooks them up and gets the old curry rabbit and stuff. But yeah, I've always, as a young kid, right up through me into my adult stages, I've always shot rabbits and brought them home for my mum and my grandparents too. My grandmother loved rabbits. So yeah, that's always been a pretty big meal.
I get into
it.
Yeah, man, I bet. And it's that generation too, you know. There was that many bloody rabbits. That's, you know, they're either shooting them for coin back then or meat, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And what other species have you taken with the bow there, Brody? You're taking goats, pigs, got onto foxes and stuff?
Goats, pigs, foxes, deer, cats. And even there was a wild sheep. There was a really big wild sheep years ago. It was massive. It would have had a couple kilos. I don't know how much, that much. But me laying, like, sitting behind it, it was about 2 to 3 times the width of me. There was that much wool on it. Yeah, got that. And, yeah.
Dingoes.
Yeah, dingoes and all beautiful. That stuff. Yeah, it's really good. Tons of different stuff.
Got your rabbits.
Yeah, rabbits.
Shot. Yeah, heaps of different critters.
Yeah.
So you're slowly ticking off the Australian species then?
Yep, for sure.
What would be next on your list for Australia, mate?
One thing that'd be really cool to get is even have a look at getting like a rooster or like red deer or something like that. Something nice like that would be really nice to get.
Yeah, awesome. You got many reds kicking around your area?
There is a fair few reds around this area, but it's just trying to get access to places. It's just super hard, like it is everywhere around. Just like got access to a few places which there is reds on there, but just not numbers.
Yeah.
So you can walk out a dozen times and you won't lay your eyes on them. So it's just that sort of luckery, like the lottery pick there. You go out and, you might see them, you might not. So, yeah, it's pretty tough pickings for myself with not having the access. But, yeah, there is some pretty hot country around.
What about public land? Is there much public land out your way with the state forests and that? Or?
Yeah, we've got, a few of the state forests around close within sort of, like, we've got our Nundle State Forest and that sort of stuff, and a Tunga State Forest. Tunga State Forest got plenty of fallow and goats and stuff like that out there. And then, Nundle, it's got reds and fallow and plenty of pigs and that sort of stuff. But, I've never sort of had to get my R license and that sort of jazz, because growing up, because we sort of grew up out of town a little bit, and always sort of my old man is a Sparky and we've had our own business. He's had that, and we've always sort of worked on plenty of like farmers' properties, and we've always had heaps of country and that sort of stuff. And I shot kangaroos professionally for 10 years as well, so that gave me a fair bit of country. But over the years, just all the old people that we all used to know, they've all passed away, and the country gets sold. Yep. And I've lost most of my country nowadays, which it's hard when you've got kids that are so keen.
What's the age limit for state forests for kids?
I couldn't tell you, to be honest.
Man, I'm not sure either. And I'm sure enough that'd be age restricted too, unfortunately.
Most definitely. Like, I had a customer come over, and I did his bow. He drove over from Port Macquarie for me to do his bow there a bit before the rut kicked off, and he came over and I sorted his bow and all that out. And We were racing dirt bikes on the Saturday and Sunday, and I actually tuned his bow on the Friday afternoon and set it all up and got it all sorted for him. And he came around. I said, "You're going to have to sight it in after all this." And we got it roughly at home here. And yeah, he went out to the forest because his mate was booked in for the Friday and the Saturday, and he was booked in for the Sunday and the Monday. And yeah, the DPI went out there and actually ran into him and caught up with him. And yeah, you're not even allowed, which I wasn't sure. Like, I didn't know this, but yeah, the DPI. I was talking to the DPI ranger, and he said, "You're not allowed to target shoot in the state forest."
Yeah, wow.
Which I thought that was really strange, because if you're out there for a week at the state forest hunting, especially as archers, we like to throw a couple of shots like into the target before we go anywhere to check your gear. Or yeah, if you have a fall, you want to be able to shoot and have a couple of target shots. But yeah, you're not allowed to do any target shooting on the forest, like in the forest.
That's even ridiculous. When you've got a book.
Yeah, which I thought that was strange. And that's what the DPI officer said. Yeah, no, you can target shoot at an animal, but you're not allowed to do it at a target. So that's just, yeah, there'd have to be definitely restrictions for ages.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing, you know, with the public land. Here in South Australia, we got no public land, which is just devastating. Yep. And bow hunting seems to be on the agenda of getting banned, so that's by the end of this year it's going to be banned by the sounds of it.
Really? That's crazy, isn't it?
And you know, it's private property, like there's no way they're going to be able to enforce it or control it, you know.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous, but I've spent way too much time talking about that crap. You know, it's been my last 12 months, just every spare minute writing to politicians and talking to politicians about it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But what would be the most important item you guys take out with you when you go out?
Binoculars. You can do so many miles using your binoculars.
Yep.
Yeah, if you can find good vantage points and stuff like that, just always run those binos over everything, because your naked eye, you won't see critters hiding in the grass or whatever. But yeah, the binoculars, probably one of the most important.
And you're running them in bino harnesses, both of you?
Yep.
What binos are you both running?
Brody's actually just got my old pair. I've just got a new pair. I've given him their set of Bushnell HDs.
Yep.
So just 10x42s. They're really good binoculars, really clear and that sort of stuff. And then I've just bought myself a new set of Leopold.
Yeah, beautiful.
And I just decided to go a little bit bigger set, as in like 12x50s.
Yep.
In the Leopolds. And yeah, I've got them. And yeah, I'm lost without them. And like, I went out, just because we've done a fair few afternoon hunts, like straight after work, before like the daylight savings sort of ended up here. And like, I haven't even been taking my bow out, because there's no point on bushwalking with me bow. And I've just been doing it for Brody for so long. And so I've left my bow at home. And yeah, the other week there, I left and got out to the property, went to find my binos. I'm like, oh no, I've left my binos. Brody had his, because they were in his bow bag. But I was just like walking everywhere, and it's like, "Brody, give us your binos for a sec." And it was just, it just felt lost. I felt naked, just not having them on me.
Yeah, I definitely know what that's like, and a good pair of binoculars definitely do make a difference. You see a stump in the distance and you're like, oh, there's an animal, and you put binos on it and it's a stump or a rock or a branch or a shadow. It's crazy how much things out there actually look like animals, and like your eyes play tricks on you. You're like, oh shit, that's moving.
definitely. And I like to sit off animals too, at a bit of a distance, and you can just sit there and watch them for a while before you go and make a move.
Yeah.
Because you can watch them with the binos, and you could just see what they're up to, and like their body languages and like directions they're walking and stuff like that. And it sort of just gives you a bit more of an idea, a bit more closer idea on, when you need to stalk them to get in and knowing the direction that they're going to head and stuff like that, just that little bit better.
That's it. That's it. What about funny stories? Do either of you both have a funny story to tell of something that's happened when you've been out?
Yeah, I've got one. Hunting with kids. I had Brody. Like, Brody was only a young fella. You probably would have been 7 or something like that. And again, I had with his little light arrows, light poundage, shooting rabbits. I'd always get him to use broadheads because never powerful enough to kill a rabbit or anything with a blunt. So I had a old school Cayuga broadhead and ground down to the 100 grains, like sharpened the back of it, like mad little daggers they were, great looking little heads. And Brody shot this rabbit one day. He smacked it straight through the chest, like rabbits do. They flick around and carry on. And because he smoked it, it's gone through and hit the ground, the arrow, and it was only hanging in by the flight. So it's kicked around for a couple of seconds and I've walked over towards it and it was just laid there like it was dead. And as soon as I got near it, it just kicked up and ran straight towards me. And as I was walking, the broadhead went straight in my leg.
Oh, shit.
And it went 11 centimetres up in my leg.
Oh, no.
And I had a hold of the rabbit. I reached down real quick and grabbed the rabbit because I had the broadhead and the arrow 11 centimetres up into my leg with a rabbit jumping around on the other end. Like, I'm hanging onto this rabbit for dear life. And then I tried to pull the broadhead out. I tried to get the rabbit off the arrow and the veins, and that wouldn't go through the rabbit. And then I'm like, right, I have to pull this arrow out. So I pulled the arrow out as far as I could, and it was stuck in the bit of the muscle in my leg, near my shin. And I tried to unscrew it. And because I screwed Brody's heads in really tight, I couldn't unscrew it. So I'm like, oh, I've got to pull it all the way out. So, yeah, pulled it all the way out, unscrewed the broadhead, got it off the rabbit. And then, yeah, I ended up having to drove into town. And then, yeah, we went up to the hospital and they had to get it all flushed out and some stitches and that in there. So that's a bit of a funny story. And hunting with kids, the old rabbit got a bit of comeback on me.
Bloody ran out your jousting style. Got
oh, yeah, it got me good.
Oh, that would have been horrible to have on your gravestone, taken out by a rabbit with a.
the hospital ladies thought it was hilarious. Like when I was trying to tell them what happened, they're just like, one of the ladies said, "Oh, don't be surprised if a couple of the ladies come up and see you, like they want to hear this story." And yeah, when they were flushing it out, because I sort of didn't realize at the time exactly how far up it went, and when they were sticking this big syringe like that, a really really long syringe, and it was 11 centimeters, and they're like, that's, it was going the full length. She's like, that's gone like 11 centimeters up into your leg. And yeah, she was just flushing it out. And they thought they were going to have to open me leg right up. Cause they were just worried about infection, like going through the rabbit and everything. But once they flushed it all out, they were pretty happy with how clean it all went. And, yeah, they sewed it all up. And then, yeah, a few days later, just all the bruise and right up towards the calf, because it went through the front near the shin,
yeah,
down low, and it ended straight up and nearly popped out the back of my calf muscle.
Oh, bloody hell.
So, yeah, it's pretty mad bit of bruising, and that came up after that. And then it wasn't long after that, I still had my stitches in. We were actually heading up to Cape York. So you're walking in the swamps and stuff like that, and I had stitches still in my leg.
Oh, no.
So that was a trip I made sure I had to have all the like the waterproof patches on it and change it every day. And yeah, so bit of excitement, bit of fun.
How'd you go with that, Brody? Was dad worried at all? Did he scream? Did he cry? A lot of swearing. What was going on?
I reckon it would have been a little bit of swearing, I reckon, and a bit. Yeah, I don't know what else would have happened. I can't really remember that much of it. But yeah, I definitely do remember the rabbit on the end of the arrow and that, and drive home a day.
We've still got photos. You got photos with him in the rabbit.
Yeah.
We made sure of that.
Should have got some with it still stuck in the dad's leg there with the rabbit attached.
Oh, yeah. Definitely would have been a sight to see.
Oh, it's amazing how many people have, you know, not just, you know, stabbed by the broadhead, but the knocks going through, you know, people shoot a bow and then run out and, you know, get the end of the knock straight through their leg. It's been crazy to see.
I've seen that happen so many times. People just throw that outside leg a little bit too far forward when they're pulling arrows and that out. Yeah, I've seen that. Like, yeah, knocks completely disappear into people's legs when I've used to shoot a lot of target.
What about first aid? Do you carry much of a first aid kit on you, or?
I always carry, like, in my truck, both of my cars, they've got good first aid kits. My mum's a nurse. She's just retired now. But, yeah, she's always made sure I've got a good first aid kit stuck right in there. In my backpack, I've always got, like, your snake bandages with a rough sort of first aid kit in my backpack at all times. So just in case things like that happen. But, yeah, I think I just throw a bit of bandage over it and then insulation, like electrical tape around it, and then drove home.
Beautiful. That's one way to fix it up, you know.
But always try and carry a bit of first aid stuff.
What about you, Brody? Can you think of something that's funny that's happened when you've been out?
Couple of years ago, we were up at Cape York on a trip and we just finished fishing, and it was at this one river, and I had these three points going off in all directions, and they all looked the exact same, and we forgot to bring our GPS. And we sat there for a bit, and we're like, we went that way. And then the next time we thought we went that way, so we went one way because that looked exactly like the same way we came in from. And we followed that up for ages, and then realized when it was starting to get dark, this isn't the way we went. The car's on the other side over there.
We missed the turn off.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're out for a night. Out for a night, dehydrated, not much water, not much food at all. Out there in the bush, just fish nods. And, yeah, we could hear him out there. We could try to find us in the cars, but, yeah, just could not find them. They were too far away.
Yeah, you were only about seven years old. So I knew what I did. We walked up the creek and just missed the turn off to our left.
Yep.
And I walked up there. We walked up the creek there a bit further. And I'm like, we've walked way too far. We've missed the turn off. It's back there. And then because we left it so late when we left because the fishing was so good. We were just catching so many barra and toga. And I'm just like, nah, it's over here. The car's just over here. I knew exactly where the car and that was, but I just didn't want to walk with the young fella being so young at night time. So I was just like, yeah, we just hunkered down and had a little bit of a nap. And as soon as the sun come up the next morning, I just took him straight to the road. And, that's when we felt like mates and that come and picked us up. So they were freaked out, which I totally understand. They were freaked out because, like, anything can happen up there, like whether a croc takes you or whatever. So, my mates and that just poked along and, found us. And it's like, right, they went and got the sat phone and rang Cohen and that and told them not to send the chopper because they were going to send a chopper for us. But, it was just like, I knew where we were and I knew what we did wrong. Missed that turn off. But, yeah, leaving the old GPS behind, I'll never live that one down.
Yeah, I had a similar situation with my pop when I was about similar age as well. And, you know, we're out hunting goats and pop and his mate took the GPS, compass reading too close to the car. So it set it off and put us, you know, kilometers in the wrong direction when we were finishing up. And that's how I won my 22 Hornet. You know, pop's like, oh, you know, if you can hold it from now until we eventually find the car, which was probably 2-3 hours later, you can have it. And yeah, won that.
Beautiful.
From him. But yeah, it's never fun getting lost. I've never not gone out with some sort of GPS.
yeah.
Or known where I am since. So yeah.
Yeah, I bought my own GPS then. After that trip, I bought my own GPS and got the apps on the phone and that now. Makes life so much easier because it's just so easy to miss those little turnoffs in those creeks, like dry creeks. especially when they're so wide, and I was just trying to walk the easiest sort of route, and yeah, just to miss it was so easy, because like you're not going to get lost up in the hills here. Like anyone that gets lost here should really not be anywhere near the hills, because it's just always so easy to find vantage points and like on the skylines with the hills and stuff like that. There's just there's no excuse to get lost up in these hills. But yeah, when you're up there in that flat country, there's an out west too, like it all looks the same in a lot of the spots.
It definitely would, and I can definitely understand that. You know, it's the same here with the hills. You just get to a point and you can find a road, or you know, you can see some power lines or telephone tower or something, so you always know your sense of direction. And that's, you know, I've been taking the little fella out quite a bit this rut. You know, too noisy to get close to anything, but you know, I've been showing him, you know, like if you follow those power lines, that's how you get back to the car. And just been letting him take the way and lead the way. I'm like, which way now, mate? Which way now? So slowly teaching him his sense of direction.
that's a good thing. Like we took Brad Smithy out for a hunt one time, like when Brode was only real young, and we sort of did a bit of hunting, and I shot a fox, caught a fox in, and I shot a fox, and then Smithy goes, "Hey, Brodes, what way is it to the car?" Not expecting Brody to know the distance, know where it was. And Brody goes, "Oh, yeah, if we just walk straight up here and walk over there, the road's over there, and then we can walk straight up to the car." And yeah, Brad was like, "Oh, righto.
That's good."
Yeah, just not expecting it. And like, yeah, I've done the exact same like you said. You sort of teach them the way to do it. And yeah, like that was like up the Cape there, I knew exactly where we were and what we'd done wrong, and I knew where the car was. But it was just like, too late.
Too dangerous to move.
Yeah, fishing was, it's too good up there.
I bet.
It's just next level.
I want to get up there one day. That's for sure.
Oh, it's, you got to put it on the bucket list, mate, for sure.
Oh, once the youngest is, you know, flinging arrows, that's something on the list. You know, he's always asking what we can go hunt when he's older, and you
know. yeah, definitely. And it's just, I try and get up to see Maddie at Cayuga Adventures sort of every year, and it's just next level up there. It's so much fun, and it's such a nice place up there. And Maddie's running a good show up there at the moment, and that sort of stuff. And yeah, the kids just absolutely love it. Like this year, we're going to head back up again and take Broads up again. And
beautiful.
Lacey's keen as mustard.
How good.
Kim, my wife, she's coming up as well. So that's just it's my holiday for the year. That's all I do. It's just head straight up there, and I get to catch up with Maddie and Dean and all that up there, which is, it's great.
Yeah, they get a good crew up there, that's for sure.
Definitely. And yeah, Broads just loves his fishing and hunting and that sort of stuff.
Speaking of fishing, Broads, what's your favourite species to go chase? I see you do a fair bit of cod fishing and...
Yeah, cod, they're really fun, they are. But also, up there, I love catching the barra.
Yep.
Yeah, they're one of my favourites, they are. They fight so well, they do. They always put up a good fight, they do.
What,
a good barra, Mundy.
Do you like top water fishing or divers or soft plastic?
Yeah, I love the top water fishing. It's so good, especially for the cod. When you're not expecting it, just out of nowhere, just a boof. Sometimes even at the rod tip and that, it's just out of nowhere. You never know. It's always good fun, good surprise.
Are you running spin gear or bait caster, or what are you running, mate?
Running a bait caster I'm at the moment, Daiwa.
Yeah, beautiful. And how'd you go at mastering that? Did Dad have to break out lots of tangles and bird's nests?
No, he didn't, not really. He used to just sit out the front when I first had a look at him. I did used to sit out the front with just a little, like, practice lure thing that you can chuck around. Teacher with, like, the bait casters, that. Used to sit out the front, chuck that up and down the road, getting used to the bait cast, and, got the hang of it real quick.
It's good to hear.
Which is really good. Yeah.
I still struggle with mine. I use it for trolling in the kayak, and that's about it.
Lacey's actually just started last year. She started on the bait caster.
How good.
She's using the bait caster now, and she loves it. I bought her a new bait caster rod and reel for cod and for barra and that sort of stuff there just before Christmas, but she hasn't had a chance to come out and use it yet.
So good. Yeah, I'm taking my kids. We've don't have great river fishing here. You know, very small amounts of cod and callop. It's better to bait fish, but the last probably 7-ish years they've been stocking reservoirs and opening up reservoirs for people to fish. So it's $30 a year. So been slowly getting into them, and the kids are slowly starting to show some interest now. So get to take them out, and hopefully the kids get to chase their first cod this weekend when I take them out after Anzac Day.
Yeah, so good. We're so lucky. Like up in this area, we've got like the waterways we've got up here. There's a river going straight through the main part of town.
Yeah,
great fishing there. Like great cod, yellow belly, all that sort of stuff there. And like we've got trout not far from town here. And so, yeah, we've just got a good fishery. Like so many rivers through here with just great numbers of fish and quality fish. And yeah, like your biggest cod come from, not far out of town at all. Brody got a 97-centimeter cod in the kayak. just as he was pulling his lure out of the water, he saw a shadow underneath it, and then just as he was pulling it out, he just dropped it straight back down onto the water with his rod tip, and it just went boof and just nailed him.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd like to get over to that country and go chase some cod. I reckon it would be a bit different than chasing the, you know, these reservoir stock cod. They're good fun to catch, but they're just lazy cod. Don't put up much of a fight at all.
Definitely. Yeah, this one, you'll definitely put up a good fight, because I was in a single-man canoe and I had the whole family out with us. So I got a 3-man canoe as well. So I was in a single-man kayak and Brody was in the front at the front of the 3-man canoe. Lacey was in the middle and Kim was in the back. And I said to Brody, I'd go over near that tree there and run a lure along that tree, lay down. And Brody's done a beautiful cast. Oh, good cast, bud. Like this, and slowly winding it in. He's like, oh, Dad, I think I just had a bump. It's like, oh, yeah, keep winding. And he just slowly kept winding. And he actually bought a spinner, got it on a spinnerbait, and he bought the spinnerbait with a BCF voucher that his auntie bought him. And for Christmas, only like the day before, because it's like the 28th of December or something, he got it. So, he got that, and he was just pulling it out of the water, and then he saw this, shadow, or saw something caught his eye, and he just dropped it straight down onto the water, and this thing's just gone boom, and the log was on one side, on the left-hand side, and then the front of the canoe was on the right, and he got it right in between both of them, and this thing just, dove straight to the bottom, and, me being a typical backseat driver, poor wife, poor Kim was there trying to paddle, and, I know how hard, I've just seen him try to get, a big fish, he just, for donkey's years, tried to get a big fish, and as soon as he had this fish on, I'm like typical backseat driver. I'm like, get him out of there. Get him out of the snags. And Kim's just there just trying to paddle a little hard out. He's like, I'm trying. And it just towed him around everywhere. So, and when we laid it on the mat, it just, fell short of the meter. So 97.
You reckon it's going to be a while till you break that one there, mate? Or you reckon you'll crack the metery soon?
Nah, not overly sure. Hopefully it is soon, though, that's for sure. I'd love to get the meter. That'd be so great, it would.
I bet. What about barra? You hanging for that meter barra? What's your biggest barra so far?
Biggest barra at the moment is 83 centimetres it is. But, this last year I dropped one. Massive, I did. He would have been real big. He would have been easier meter.
Oh, no.
Meter of barra. We watched him. He just tail walked. He did for a good 4 meters, and then spat the lure, and then that was him gone.
Oh no, the frustrations of fishing. But
we all were so surprised. Me, Dad, my pop, and then another one of our good mates. We all looked at each other and we were like, "What?" Our eyes were wide open. It was so crazy.
That's nuts. So what about top five dream animals for both of you? Money not being an issue anywhere in the world, what would be your top five to go chase?
Mine would probably be, I'd love to shoot a Bantang bull.
Yep.
Love to shoot a Bantang bull. Water buffalo, love to shoot a buff. They're the couple in Australia. I'd love to head back over to South Africa. Love to shoot a Cape buffalo over there. I'd love to redeem myself on a zebra. I would say, yeah, a zebra. And yeah, I want to shoot a gemsbok as well. Love to shoot a big gemsbok.
Yeah, beautiful.
What
about yourself, Brody?
I'd really like to shoot. I'd love to get a red deer, I would. I'd love to get myself like a buffalo as well, I would. I'd love to go over to New Zealand, get myself a chamois, I would. And then head over to South Africa, have a look at like a wildebeest or an impala or something like that, a zebra, something like that. Yeah, something great. It would be cool. Something that would make a really nice rug would be nice.
Yeah, the zebras, they look like they make some nice rugs, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted a pedestal mount. So I had a last day of my hunt over there. Last day. Last light, it was nearly dark. I had zebra at under 20 metres out the front, but there was always another one standing behind it, I just couldn't shoot it. And, then the stallion, he propped up at about 42 yards, and I took the shot. Like, I judged him perfect, and I had to sort of, I was half squatting to shoot underneath out of the blind. And, the old TP, mate, the old target panic got to me, and I just yanked the trigger and just shot straight over this stallion's back. Brody was with me, actually. He was only like 5 years old, hunting in the blind with me. And Dad got a bit cranky and punched the blind and threw my release aid on the ground.
We've all been there with one animal or another, that's for sure.
Yeah. And that was one of the animals on my list. Like, I wanted to get a beautiful pedestal mount. Zebra. But it got me. It beat me.
Those mounts where they have the map of Africa behind them with the skin of the zebra and then the mount hanging out of that, they look freaking wicked.
Yeah, next level, eh? Beautiful.
Tough critters too, I've heard. They can soak up a hit, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty good, like, because they've got something to aim at on a broadside shot.
Yeah.
They've got, like, they call it the sergeant of arms. It's just like a triangle, and you can hit them. It's right in the triangle, and you just try and aim straight for the middle of that, and it's just there. It's like a sergeant of arms pointer. Can I hit straight in the middle there, and you'll drop them.
Did you get to try a few of those African species while you're over there?
Yeah. We got to eat the animals and that sort of stuff when we were over there. We tried, like your kudu, gemsbok, impala, and all that sort of jazz.
And what was what was your favorite? How did they go table-wise?
Kudu was nice.
Yep.
I really liked kudu. Kudu was quite nice. We had a lot of your big sausages over there. Their sausages are made into like a big snail sort of thing, big round. They don't just twist them off like our sausages over here. They're just one massive sausage.
Very German, German-Dutch style.
Yeah. So, we had a lot of them and like very dark meat, of course. But, they were beautiful.
How good.
We really enjoyed them.
And kudu, what would you relate it to, if anything that you've tried over here? Or just nothing like it?
Similar to red.
Okay.
Yeah. It was quite a nice, I suppose. They're like being an antelope sort of thing. Yeah, it was sort of similar to the red because we had it in steaks and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah,
no, it was some good chewing.
So did you get to try stuff that you didn't shoot over there, or is it just...
Yeah. At the place we went to African Hornbill Safaris, which a mate of mine, he owned that property. And yeah, he had a butcher's on site. So he used to also buy animals from hunters that have harvested them from neighboring properties and everything as well.
Yeah, wicked.
So he had the butchers there. So he'd always have plenty of meat that were getting butchered up. And yeah, definitely no shortage.
Did you get to try eating zebra or?
No, I didn't get it. Not that we knew of anyway.
There's some cool animals over there that, I'll eventually get over there and hunt and eat.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I want to get, like, friends over there, they've been, like, getting up us, wanting us to come back over because it's been nearly 10 years.
Sure, 10 years now, yeah.
Yeah, it's getting cold, just under 10 years now, close to 10 years because when we went over, I took the whole family and that over, and Lacey was only... Well, she only turned 10 last week, and she was only like 4 months old when we took her over there.
Yeah, wow. That's awesome.
On a family trip. So, yeah, no, it was good. And, like, yeah, the friends of mine have been wanting us to go back over and that sort of stuff. Yeah, I'd love to. But, again, all money.
Yeah, I get it. Was that your first overseas hunting trip, or have you gone elsewhere?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's my first overseas trip. And it was, over to South Africa, which was pretty cool. Beautiful. I loved it.
That's awesome. And what animals did you take over there?
I took first animal I took over there was a kudu cow.
Yep.
Lewis wanted me to take out a cow just to get the target practice in, and he needed meat for his butchery and that sort of stuff. So I got to shoot one of them free of charge. So I got to keep the big floor rug and all that sort of stuff on that. So I shot a big kudu cow. Next one was a impala ram, big impala ram. So I got a really good size impala ram. It was like 24 inches, I think it went.
Yeah,
23 and a bit. So it was a good one. Then I took a good warthog. Not a monster. It wasn't a bad size warthog. It snapped its top grinder off, and after I shot it ran straight into a tree.
Oh no.
Snapped it off and couldn't find the part of the ivory. So it's still the trophy that I got. I took a couple of wildebeests, bulls. Brody was with me when I shot both them. And one of the heads just behind me.
All that. Yeah, how good.
So didn't end up mounting him. The taxidermy people over there wrecked my skins one, and they ended up boiling the horns and that, and they've just all cracked. All the horns and that are all split and burnt, so they're all been burnt.
Spewing.
So it's a bit devastating. That's hence the reason he's not mounted.
Yep.
I shot a monster kudu bull. He's just shy of 60 inches.
Yeah, wow.
So, and he's got like proper mass on him, really big mass. Shot that. Oh, I nearly got a crack at a ostrich. Lewis wanted me to shoot the ostrich to get rid of it, but it was just like, oh, where do I shoot it? sort of thing, not knowing like the anatomy and all that sort of stuff properly of an ostrich. And yeah, the pH was just like, yeah, you got to wait till he stands like straight on at you, and then just shoot him right at the base of the neck. And that'll just smoke him. But, yeah, drew back a few times on this ostrich. But, just didn't get the correct opportunity to let an arrow fly at him.
That would have been pretty damn cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so, yeah.
They're a big animal.
Oh, massive animal. And, like, we saw a few giraffe there. There was one big bull giraffe that, mate Lewis wanted me to shoot. And, like, I was just getting picked up, so I was just about to head, like, getting real late. And this big bull giraffe just comes wandering through the scrub, and, like, it hadn't seen us. And it was like, oh, that's one I want shot, Stubbsy. Do you want to shoot it for us? I'm like, no. So, like, it was cheap enough, and I'm like, I can afford to shoot it. But I said, like, if I want to shoot it, I want to be able to display and have the trophy to, like, it's a memory sort of thing. I want to be able to have it on display so I can, reminisce whenever I walk past it and that sort of stuff in the house. And like, our house is not big enough to have a giraffe. And but Brody was there with us, and I'm like, hey, I bet we're going to sneak up on it. So Broads, I had Broads, held Brody's hand. He was, he was only five at the time, and we snuck into 40 yards off this big bull giraffe, had no idea we were there, and it was just feeding on a tree. And, got Broads into 40 yards with me, just sitting there looking at a wild giraffe. That was pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. It would be badass taking one with a bow, though, too. It'd be weird shooting so high up, like just aiming.
Definitely. Yeah, it'd be a wicked bit of gear to shoot. They got a really thick hide. Like, you got to sort of shoot like a Cape Buffalo sort of set up to smash them.
Yeah, insane.
Big critters. Big critters.
What about wild game? What's your favorite thing to cook with wild game? Like, what cut, what animal, what dish?
Brody's eyes lit up. Venison.
Venison.
So,
you've been smashing it?
Rhodes loves his venison. We didn't take the back straps and that out of his first deer he shot this year. Yes, it was rank.
Yeah.
Old buck. In the rut, just... of course. It was rank, like really stunk, and with him being so old and that as well, like perfect shot, no stress on it or anything. So, but we took all the skin and all that and getting it tanned and everything at the moment. It's in the tanning solution at the moment. And we took his antlers and all that sort of jazz. And then, the buck he shot the next morning was a lot younger. So I said to Broads, let's get some meat off that. So backstraps was probably our favourite.
That's good.
We had some the other day, the deer that you shot. I just let it age in the fridge for a week. And then just trimmed all the sinew and that sort of stuff off it like we do. And, I just cut it into nice steaks and threw it in some Sammy Ziploc bags with like a marinade on it. A honey soy marinade sort of thing. And, it's good. I like doing them.
Oh, there's nothing.
Rhodes likes his roasts.
Roast, yeah. My favourite, I'm not sure what the cut's called, but it's on beef. It's called the gravy beef cut. Like, it's all where the tendon comes down in the back leg and you got this little round bit. Chuck that in a slow cooker in a curry sauce or a gravy or whatever, and it's freaking amazing. That's my favorite cut. And that tendon gets just real, real soft and just, incredible. So good.
Yeah,
and beautiful. Heart. Have you had heart, Brody?
Nah. I haven't tried that.
Next deer you get, whip out the heart, lay it out flat, like cut it in half, cut all the ventricles out, and then cook that up, and it's the best bit of the deer, I reckon. I was spewing about the one I shot today with the 270 because I just blew his heart to heart to smithereens and his liver.
the second deer Brody shot this year, I actually like showed Broads once we got all the meat and that off it and everything, and I split the ribs and lifted up the ribs and that for him, and I just wanted to see exactly where he hit him.
Yeah.
Because it's like he sort of smoked it on the trot, it come trotting in, and he shot it nice and close, and it ran probably 40 yards, 50 yards, and then
it's a good video.
Yeah, just struggled to stand. I'm like, oh yeah, righto, like. He smoked it. It's in trouble. And because I was sort of sitting behind him a bit and couldn't sort of see exactly where the arrow went in. And I was videoing, of course. And once we took all the meat and I flipped those ribs up and just sort of gave him a bit more of an insight too on just showing them exactly where the heart lies and the lungs lie and all that sort of stuff. Because I always like to show, doesn't matter how experienced you are, it's just always like to show people that side of things because it always surprises people where everything lays. So I opened it up and pulled the heart out. There's a trizot, three-blade broadhead, went straight through. I actually put a photo up on, I think it's just on my story in black and white, and, of the trizot went straight through the center
dead
of the figure, like the heart.
How good.
So it was just like, mate, can't ask it for any more than that. So we should have taken that heart home. And I think I actually said to Brody, I said, this is what everyone raves about, is heart.
It's really good. Everyone gets put off by the word offal, but yeah, it's so good, especially during winter. The first thing I eat is the heart and the liver. You know, cook it up with some chili and garlic and onions and mushrooms in the morning, and it's freaking wicked. There's nothing better.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, I work in the city, pretty much in the city here in Adelaide, and so I take a fair bit of venison into work, and I've been taking hearts in for the guys at work and cooking them up, and made a bunch of lamb's heart tacos the other week, and everyone ate it. Like, they were blown away. They're like, this is so good. Like, what is it? I'm like, that's the heart.
Yeah, that's like, I've had pickled like cow's tongue and that sort of stuff, and a mate stitched me up. He's, oh, it's just corned beef, mate. He said, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, right, eh? So I smacked it, and I'm like, yeah, that was good. And he goes, yeah, it was tongue. Yeah, right.
Yeah, tongue.
It tasted like good.
Tongue's good. It takes a bit to prepare, but if you save a few and boil them up and then peel them like you would peel a potato or whatever, and then cook them up and do like tongue tacos, that's not a bad way to prepare them.
This was just on a sandwich, and it was just like slathered up just like a corned beef sandwich, like you'd normally have it. And yeah, he gave me that, and it was it was good. Tasted quite good.
So good. So how do you guys see the public view on hunting and hunters?
It's changed a lot over the last fair few years, as everyone knows, with social media. Sort of can be a bad thing, social media, just with getting that wrong thing across. A lot of people nowadays, I find that they shoot animals when they normally wouldn't shoot animals, because they just want to shoot animals for likes on Facebook. That's a big thing for us now. We notice that and just shake your head, but each to their own. It's definitely... it's good for advertising, can be, for businesses especially, with having, getting your name out there for, like, all your companies and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
With people using their gear, that sort of thing. But, it's not too bad. You just got to be careful what you show.
And, Brody, what about with, like, school? How do the kids react at school and teachers? Have you had... many negative experiences from teachers, you know, butting in like you shouldn't be hunting, or is it because you're pretty rural?
Yeah, the teachers, they actually think it's pretty cool. They do. Tons of them. They like having a good chat about it. Like the agriculture teachers at school, they always have a good chat about it and everything like that, which is good. And then like my year advisor I got at the moment, she loves hearing about it and all that stuff she does. They all think it's great. Lots of them do, which is good.
That's awesome. So overall, you'd see the public views on hunting and hunters is pretty positive in that aspect.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's good.
That's good, because it could go, especially, you know, being kids involved and teachers. Teachers tend to be more on the liberal side of things.
definitely.
But yeah, being, you know, in a rural-ish area probably makes a bit of a difference.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Like most people around here, they're pretty good. And you do get a few people that don't agree with it and that sort of stuff. We don't sort of have any real drama.
That's good.
Which is good.
That's really good. How would you change the public views for the better on hunting and hunters? What would you do if you could?
Educate more people. Because you'll find, a lot of it there, the negativity, they haven't looked into it. They haven't been shown how things are done. They see the bad things and they run with it, sort of thing.
Yeah.
They never, it's sort of hard. You need, people need to open up their minds a little bit before they get on their high horse and just go, nah, hunting's crap. Nah, it's dangerous. Oh, why are you paying to shoot an animal?
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff. It's just, that's a tough, and it's same with the Africa thing over there. Like everyone say, people shooting these animals over there, and all these rich people are going over there shooting animals. But if it wasn't for those people to go and pay to shoot those animals would be extinct.
Yeah, that's it.
sort of thing. And a lot of it's over here too. Like, yeah, people are paying to shoot some animals and that sort of stuff. But those properties that people are paying to shoot animals on, they're all managed. They're all managed. They're like, yeah, you try and shoot the cull heads to try and get good genetics in there. Yeah. You try and keep the numbers to a good number. So, like, it just breeds, everything breeds well. And, yeah, like, it's just, it's bloody, that's the best way to do it, I reckon.
Yeah, just definitely.
Educate them that it's, yeah, it's not all bad. And not everyone are cowboys.
Yep, that's 100% it. And finally, what is hunting to you guys?
Oh, just basically my way of life sort of thing. Done it forever.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just something that I'll never stop doing.
What about you, Brody? Is that similar or?
Yeah, it's great. Love the outdoors. Just away from everybody, just you, nature, silent, away from everything. Away from society, it's just great. It is really good.
No, that's awesome, man. And, you know, it seems like you guys are a fairly outdoorsy family, whether it's, you know, racing or riding bikes. I see you're constantly – what are you racing at the moment, Brody? What category?
I'm racing at the moment in the 125, 250 Junior Lights class I am. That goes from 13 to 16 years of age, it does, in that group. And I'm racing at the moment. I got two KTM 250s, one set up for like the motocross sort of race, and then I've got the other one that's set up for more like the enduro race than it is.
Yeah, beautiful. And that's something you've always been into as well, Andrew?
I've always loved motorbikes and that sort of stuff, and I was never allowed to have motorbikes as a real young kid. Mum sort of tried to wrap me up a bit in cotton wool. I had a birth injury when I was born, so for the first sort of 10 years of my life, I had 13 operations on the left arm and shoulder. So she was always nervous. Oh, I don't want you getting hurt and all this sort of stuff. So whereas I didn't start riding a motorbike, I got my first bike probably, I think I would have been 12, something like that. And then, yeah, that was just an old farm bike cruising around. And then I bought my first bike back in 1997 with my own money as a kid. And, yeah, it was a KX125, and that was my first race bike. And I, got myself into racing. And, yeah, I had to pay for everything. I had to pay for everything. So it was, it was good. I always loved my motorbikes.
Ah, it's good. And what do you do these days, mainly just enduro stuff?
Both. Bit of everything. So yeah, we'll do, enduro. Love it. Enduro, racing, sprints, and that sort of stuff. We do motocross.
Yep.
And that sort of stuff as well. We sort of love doing all of it, all sort of bikes.
Do you guys have a 24-hour enduro up there?
No, we don't up here.
You've seen the one down here in SA? It's a 24.
Yeah.
It's Dad used to race it. I think he came first in his class a couple years in a row. It's a brutal, like, would storm chase him, like, just follow him around point to point for 24 hours, and he'd be wrecked for like a month afterwards.
Oh, it's next level. Like, we do the Pony Expresses up here, and like, I usually do the old boys class, like the over 35s, and like, it's 2 hours non-stop, like, with only a compulsory fuel stop. Oh, tell you what, just your hands, and you try and race that, like, it just knocks you around. And Brody's just stepped up, like, he's doing 2 hours as well, say, for his enduro, so with that one compulsory stop. And, yeah, it takes it out of you.
You fellas.
You've got to hand it to those guys that do the Ironman, and like you said, your dad doing that 24-hour, like, that's next level.
Yeah, you guys should look into it. Come down here, bring the bows, do some bow fishing, come do some bow hunting, and do the 24-hour afterwards.
As long as they've got a defib there ready for me.
it's been great having you on, guys. What's your social media for? I'm guessing everyone that listens to this podcast pretty much follows you guys anyway, because it's a bloody good Instagram to follow.
Mine's Stubbsy27 and Outdoors. That's my Instagram and all that sort of stuff. Yep. I think yours is Stubbsy Junior.
Yeah, Stubbsy Junior, Stubbsy Junior 3 underscore end, and then like underscore again outdoors. So basically, exactly like Dad's, it is just Stubbsy Junior 3.
Yeah, awesome. I'll chuck those in the podcast bio for when this comes out, so people can give you a follow. But I guarantee pretty much everyone listening already follows anyway for the awesome content you guys put up, and you know, you've been Cheers. Putting it up for a while, and it's great to see you put up the stuff of the kids, you know, especially because people tend to shy away showing, you know, kids hunting and all of that type of thing. You know, they're scared of getting lashed back and all of that, especially online. But
yeah, that's what it's all about for me. That's what I've always done. It's been awesome. Even when we started, and like Matty Moore started up his Cayuga Broadheads, I used to help run the social media page and that for him, and the lead of the sales and packaging and all that sort of stuff when Matty was busy. And I'd always use Brody as a great little salesman, and like we'd take him out, he'd shoot critters, and I'd put it up, and I put up the videos and that sort of stuff on the socials. And then next minute you get a phone call or a message from Matty. He'd be like, "Have you just put up a video or photo of Brody?" And it's like, "Yep." He's just like, "I've just had that many orders just come through the door." And yeah, I was just sort of, I love showing people, the kids, what the kids do. And yeah, it's just like, I'm pretty proud of it.
Yeah, I reckon I tried the pilot cuts because of you guys. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's good.
Awesome, guys. Thank you very much for coming on. I hope people have enjoyed the chat, and I hope you guys have enjoyed coming on.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Easy, fellas. Have a good one.
Same to you. Thanks, mate.
Gotcha.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Hunting Connection Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed our discussions and gained valuable insights into the world of hunting, fishing, and the outdoors. To stay connected with us and never miss out on an update, please be sure to follow us on social media, all at Hunting Connection Podcast. We appreciate your support and would love for you to share the podcast with your friends and family. Don't forget to tag us in your hunting photos on social media and let us know about your experiences. Your feedback is invaluable to us, so please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Together, we continue growing and delivering more captivating episodes for all hunting enthusiasts. Stay connected, stay informed, and keep pursuing your passion for the hunt. Until next time, happy hunting.